And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. It's just gone 20 past 11. On Thursday night, Andy Mitten and I are cuddled up in the press box at Old Trafford, looking out over a pretty empty stadium, to be fair. The groundsmen have gone home. I think the guys who are picking the litter have gone home as well, Andy. But we are still here, revelling in Manchester United's famous victory over Ammonia Nicosia, aren't we?
You've built that up really strongly, haven't you? Looking over the beautiful pitch, which is going to have five home games in 18 days, and there's still some markings on it from the rugby final, which was played here. Really good crowd here tonight, including the 4,500 Ammonia Nicosia fans who were very vocal. And Manchester United won the game, but that's not the talking point. I'm sure we're going to cover different areas.
Yeah, there's lots to get through, of course. We'll have a reaction to the match tonight, but we also want to preview the game against Newcastle, which kicks off an important week for United. We'll talk about yet more takeover talk as well. Plus, the fiasco continues over the tickets for the Chelsea away match as well. We've got an update on that. But I'm delighted to say that smiling back at me on my screen, sat at home because he couldn't be bothered coming, Laurie Whitwell's also on the podcast. Hello, Laurie.
Hi, guys. How you doing? Hope it's not too cold out there.
Why are you not here, mate?
Well, I've got lots on, you know, and I know I'm going to sound like a big-time Charlie here, but United at home...
Too busy hanging out with Gary Neville. That's what he's going to say, isn't it?
Yeah. Did you like it? It's got quite a few views, that, you know, on YouTube.
It's all about you, I'm sure, mate.
I saved my best stuff for here, though.
I should hope so as well, absolutely. Well, as you might have guessed, Laurie wasn't here covering the game, and neither was Carl Anker. He's not on the podcast either. But we do have Dan Sheldon, who is the football news reporter in Manchester for The Athletic, and Andy and I caught up with him to react to the match that he's covering for The Athletic tonight just a short time ago. So, Dan, thank you for making your Talk of the Devils debut. How old are you?
I'm 27.
27. How long have you been a journalist for?
Since I was 22, so 5 years.
5 years. And how long have you lived in Manchester for?
Since July.
So that's a few months.
Yeah.
How many months since July, Andy?
I'm also 27.
And you look it, yeah.
Cheers, mate.
But basically, what I'm getting at is you waited all that time to cover your first match at Old Trafford, covering Manchester United, to see Scott McTominay become the first substitute in Manchester United's European competition history to score a winner in the 90th minute since Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in the 1999 Champions League final. You must be absolutely buzzing.
Well, I feel like I'm here for the birth of Erik ten Hag time. So, you know, it was good. I mean, it was a really interesting match from United's perspective. They probed.
Was it?
Yeah, I thought it was. You know, I thought, you know, they've had so many shots, but the goalkeeper was inspired. And yeah, McTominay, after being booed about 2 minutes before that shot for skying one over, he found the back of the net, so it was good.
What do you think, Andy? I found it a hard watch at times.
It was, but there's lots to talk about.
There is, true.
The Manchester United supporting goalkeeper who had the match of his life,
yeah,
having broken into the team and stood there saying, my dad also supports Manchester United, and obviously United are hugely popular in Nigeria. I think it was a frustrating night to watch it. Relief at the end. To United's credit, the team never gave up. I thought Casemiro was probably United's best player. 34 shots. Ridiculous that none of them were going in. The finishing has got to be better. We can talk about as many individuals as you like. Shame that Sheriff didn't help us out with a win against Real Sociedad, but that's to be expected. And Manchester United have got to go to San Sebastian and get a win, which is difficult, but I actually think it is possible. And I think it would be important, if Manchester United can do that, to avoid a couple more games in the Europa League. I think we should definitely mention the Ammonia fans, 4,500 of them.
A lot of them, weren't there?
Brilliant. Well, Manchester has a big Cypriot community, and that goes back to 1974 when the island was divided. And a lot travelled, a long way, as we saw last week, 5 hours by plane. I mean, if you're going to go by boat, it's even longer.
I mean, try and walk it, mate.
You can't, unless you can walk over water, mate.
Some can, I've heard.
Can't or not?
One man.
They were loud, and they got louder as their team resisted Manchester United's multiple attempts. United's finishing really should have been better. Marcus Rashford had 10 shots, and I actually thought he played all right. I thought he was confident.
One of his shots was that bad that the referee thought it was a corner, because he hit the, I think it was about 6 yards wide when he was clean through. It was that far wide that it must have took a deflection. I don't think it did.
He wasn't the only one, mate.
Absolutely not, by the way.
Bruno had some absolute howlers. I thought he was maybe the most creative player in the first half, dropped right off in the second half and was frustrating. Scott McTominay's effort before he scored, you know them four new towers in Manchester, the massive ones? It bounced off the top of one of them, and they're two.
It woke Carl Anker up, didn't it?
Yeah, it woke Carl up on his in his 32nd floor where he can't get Wi-Fi, where the postman doesn't deliver things to him.
Dan, can we talk about their goalkeeper just for a moment? Francis Azoho, he came in to the press conference. I've not actually seen that at a match before for an opposing player to come in, and he had a smile as wide as the press conference room. A United fan, admittedly, Neil Lennon said that he's not shut up about playing United for weeks. What a dream it must be for him.
Oh, it was an amazing night for him. I think even in the press conference just now, he was talking about it being the best night of his life. And normally you're used to goalkeepers, if you concede in the, you know, after making all those saves and then you concede in the final second, they're not going to describe it as the best night of their life. But it just meant so much to him, and on the way out of the press conference room he posed for a picture with Erik ten Hag, so we'll have that as a nice memory. And I think I saw a tweet in 2017, he put a picture up of David De Gea and it was like, I'm coming for you, my idol. And then there was a picture of him after tonight. So like, you can't make that stuff up for some players, and it was just really good to see. And at the final whistle he went down on the floor and Neil Lennon was straight over to console him. You know, he can certainly leave with his head held up high tonight.
That's it. And to concede in stoppage time when you've made 11 saves, being a United fan against United here at Old Trafford, no matter which way you look at it, it was pretty special for him. And Neil Lennon actually said after the match that this result, if they'd got a draw, would have been up there with beating Barcelona with Celtic, which is a huge statement, isn't it? And shows just how close they came. He said it would have been the biggest result in their history to get a draw here. I mean, United should really be dispatching teams like this pretty easily, shouldn't they? I think they were 45-1 on to win this game.
Yes, they should. But this is why we love football. Not everything goes to plan. I thought Neil Lennon spoke very well after the game. And he said that he'd been here a few times. He said he never thought he would come here as a manager.
Interesting that. I'd not really thought about that.
Yeah. He's just sort of put a limit on his own ambition and thought, I'm never going to be good enough to come here. And he said, I've had a few, I think the word was chasings. I wonder what the Cypriot word for chasings is. I was thinking about the translator, like.
The press officer was sat next to him, like, yeah. Going, hmm.
Yeah, I had a few dealings with that press officer before the game. I was promised an interview with one of our players. I wish now. In hindsight.
Have you offered out a Cypriot press officer tonight?
I've not offered anyone out, but I wish I would have known that their goalkeeper was a Manchester United fan, because that would have been a good story. So when United played in Astana a couple of years ago, I got a little tip-off that their Icelandic midfielder was a former fisherman who loved Man United, and it made for a good interview. On this occasion, I spoke to one of the Ammonia players who's from Moston in Manchester. Last week, had a lovely 10-minute chat with him. He said, I'm going to give you a ring on Sunday and we'll do a nice big interview. And maybe my phone battery had died because I didn't get a phone call. That's only happened 2 or 3 times in my entire journalist career. Seriously. You know, really? Oh, I think...
Brandon Barker we're talking about,
yeah,
I presume.
Yeah, we are, yeah. And I had a good chat with him, and it's just odd, because I think if you say you're going to do something, then you should do it. And he didn't do it, and that's a frustration, because I could have interviewed several of their different players. But it was nice afterwards to find out that the goalkeeper was a United fan, and just to see his expression, and just to admit, you know, yeah, it was the best game of my life with his manager next to him.
When he's lost 1-0 and let one in stoppage time, yeah.
And he wasn't even the first choice goalkeeper. And Lennon was like, I've got to be honest, I'm gutted. I'm gutted because 92nd minute,
Absolutely. Subs are a thing as well, Andy, aren't they? 7 of United's last 8 goals have been scored by players off the bench. Now, Erik ten Hag was asked about that in the press conference. He said he was happy about it and it showed a good spirit in the squad. What do you think?
I agree with him, and it's not just the goal scorers. The example he gave was Raphael Varane coming on against Everton and preventing Jordan Pickford from scoring. I thought that was good. So it points to a greater togetherness. It points to good team spirit. I think there's a pattern now starting to develop with Ten Hag's teams. They've not drawn a match yet. So there's 12 matches, won 8 and lost 4. Don't think United deserve to win all of those 8. So United have ridden the luck in several of those games, but he's getting wins. That's the most important thing for a new manager. And he does turn to his subs, and they do make an impact. He also drops players if they're not playing well and brings on substitutes. So I think Luke Shaw lost his place in the team, came on as a sub at Everton, and did well. And today I thought when he came on, he did well. So I like the way he uses substitutions. I think there were times when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer left it too late to bring on subs. That frustrated a lot of fans. So I think Ten Hag's in-game management is positive, because this is still a team in transition. There's still loads of improvement individually, collectively as well. And he's getting wins. If he can get wins while the team is still sort of finding its feet and players are finding their feet, including the new signings, and Anthony's probably the most notable one there. He's got to add a lot of variation to his game. That's another thing he said in the press conference, what I found was quite interesting.
He's not holding back on Anthony, is he?
Well, he shouldn't hold back on him. He cost a huge amount of money. He scored in the 3 league games, which hasn't been done before for a new player. I think that Jadon Sancho's not played as well as Anthony, but Anthony's still got to do a lot more. Variation was a key word I felt that Ten Hag used on Anthony. He's got to do things differently. He's not just got to be a one-trick pony. There were times tonight where he'd do a brilliant ball and other times where...
One-trick Tony.
I like that, mate. You should be a journalist. And there were other times where moves broke down because he put a really poor ball into the box.
You've written about it, Dan, this week. Manchester United fans will have seen it on The Athletic. The signs that this team is becoming more of an Erik ten Hag team. It feeds into what Andy's just been saying as well. Are you encouraged by what you've seen then? Does tonight, despite the fact that the end product wasn't quite there, there were still signs that there was creation, changing the way that the team was playing, but making the changes, feels like a Ten Hag signature already as well.
Yeah, I think the signs were there tonight, but then in the same breath, I don't think it should take Man United and that 11 that he put out 95 minutes to kill off this team.
You know, strong 11 as well, wasn't it?
It was a really strong 11. You know, they've run themselves into the ground tonight to beat a team they should be beating 4-0, 5-0 at a canter, to be honest, if we're being brutally honest about the quality of Emmanuel Bart, the goalkeeper. So I think that is a bit of a concern, having watching them. You know, there's a lot of games in October, 9 games this month alone, which is the highest number of single games. I think they've only done it 11 times in the Premier League. They've never played more than 9, but this month is 9. So you know, it's a lot of games. They could do with not having 2 more in February, so getting the win was important. But the signs are there. It will take time. And you can kind of see, I saw it at Southampton with Ralph, to kind of cover the club I used to cover. He stuck with the same 11 a lot simply because it takes time to get his message across. And if you're chopping and changing the team all the time, those players don't learn it. So I can see why Ten Hag would do it. But at the same time, it's a lot of games and that 11 shouldn't take 95 minutes to beat this team.
What were the aspects that you saw then in the Everton game that made you think that this was more of a Ten Hag team?
I like the turnovers in the final third. They had 9 turnovers in the final third against Everton, which is more than any other game they had this season. So that was impressive. They were passing more, but they were probing more, prodding more, you know, they were more direct, they were quick with it. They weren't just recycling possession. They had possession with purpose, especially in the first half. You know, they were carving Everton open. That I thought was really impressive. But it was mainly the pressing. You know, 9 turnovers I thought was good. The chances they were created was good. They were a bit more solid defensively than their lowest expected goals against of the season against Everton. So that was better. But they're still only a handful of games into him taking over, so it's still going to take time before we see the full effect of what he wants them to do.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to read more about Dan's thoughts on this Manchester United team becoming more and more in Erik ten Hag's image, you can read his piece on The Athletic now. Dan, I'm going to let you go because you've got to go and write a piece about tonight, haven't you? What are you going to write about? A Zoho, maybe?
Well, I wish I could write 800 words about him. That would be easy. No, it'll be about, you know, just the the fact that, well, basically what I've just said, that it shouldn't take them 95 minutes to beat this team and they're going to run themselves into the ground if they're not careful.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks for coming on, mate.
No worries. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, neat little debut that for Dan, wasn't it, to be fair? Laurie, don't get too jealous, because there's one area that we didn't cover with Dan that we want to do with you, because you're still very important to us, of course. You tweeted after the match the scenario for United in the Europa League. Just remind United fans about the doomsday scenario of finishing second in this group.
Yeah, well, does it look an inevitability? I mean, I suppose United can go to La Real and win.
Inevitable.
United can go there and win.
Okay.
It's hard, but can do it.
So, okay, it's a possibility. It's a strong possibility, should we say that? Because Real Sociedad have looked good in this group, haven't they? Another comfortable win tonight for them over Sheriff. But yeah, if they finish second in the group, United, then it means that they go into the playoff for the knockout stage of the Europa League, which is where they come into contact with the teams that have finished third in the Champions League. So it also means two extra games, which in a calendar that's already congested, which they have to put two postponed matches into, the Leeds and Crystal Palace games. It just adds, a layer of complexity to it. But yeah, I mean, the teams that are third in the Champions League groups at the moment include Barcelona, include Ajax, include Juventus, Atletico Madrid, Sporting Lisbon. So it's a bit of a who's who. You know, I think even Juventus, if I've not mentioned them, AC Milan, a bit of a who's who of European football. So it could even shape out that the Europa League is kind of like the competition where, you know, these historically great teams are. But yeah, I think it just maybe it makes things exciting. You know, often we've had to wait for the really interesting fixtures to come along in the Europa League. But this would actually bring them about in sort of a couple of game weeks in February.
Yeah, just to put it into context, United have qualified now, haven't they, for the knockout stages with that result tonight. Real Sociedad, though, beat Sheriff 3-0. They're in a much stronger position in the group, having won at Old Trafford, of course. They go to Omonia next. And Neil Lennon, Andy, was saying that they were a minute or two away from their greatest result in their history tonight by getting a 0-0 draw. Well, they can do it against Sociedad, can't they? That would be a good result, 0-0.
It would be a great result, given that Real Sociedad have won all four of their group games and kept clean sheets in three of those group games.
What about the league form? Any hope there?
I think Real Sociedad are 6 unbeaten across the board. They're not the best Basque team, if you want me to. Athletic Club are above them in the league. Real Sociedad are very well organised. We saw that at Old Trafford. They do not have players to the same technical level as Manchester United. They've got a really good manager. It's a club in a good place. They've redone the stadium. The ground's going to be full, probably for the first time ever, when Manchester United visit. Thankfully, they've increased the ticket allocation for Manchester United fans, because they were being a bit 10 men initially and trying to be a bit tight with the ticket allocation. But it's a big game, but United will not be favourites. But I compare it a little bit to Villarreal away last year when Michael Carrick was in charge. Very difficult to go to. Manchester United have got a really poor record in Spain. But I fancy United. I do. I think United will win the game. And as Laurie said, it will be significant if United do it. And the other point about the competition is, there's a lot of really strong teams. It's going to be a very hard competition to win this.
It is, isn't it?
Because there's the Giants, and I was at Barcelona against Inter last night. Incredible game of football. Barcelona are going to be difficult to play against. And Sevilla, who've dominated this competition by a mile more than anybody else. They're going to drop into it as well from the Champions League. So there are stronger teams in there, stronger clubs. If you think Barca and Man United are two of the three biggest clubs in the world and they're both in the Europa League, neither are built to be playing Europa League football. They're both built to be reaching the latter end of the Champions League season after season. This is a new reality.
Yeah, it is. I love how we're building up the Europa League, considering we've committed our lives to spending Thursday nights here at Old Trafford watching the team in this competition. And we might be spending yet more time if they finish second in this group. Let's move it on then, because before we consider the idea of United finishing first or second in this group, there's a really important week ahead in the Premier League, Laurie, isn't there? I mean, Newcastle at the weekend, it's probably the strongest Newcastle team that's come to Old Trafford in a couple of decades, isn't it?
Yeah, they're looking good, and they've done a bit of a media blitz this week, haven't they? Dan Ashworth's been speaking. They've been opening their doors to the press pack up there and talking about their ambition, and they've got a good mode about them, really. The way they've they haven't spent wildly, I don't think. I mean, Isak for 60 million was a lot of money, clearly, but he's a young player that you think, okay, that could actually look like good value in time. So they've got a sort of sensible approach, I think. It's not kind of blindly spending, you know, the Saudi Arabian money at will. But in terms of the way that Eddie Howe's got them set up, they clearly know their roles. They've got a good sort of understanding, I think, between the players as to what he wants. And they've got a bit of depth, you know, for the first time, maybe. I mean, Alan Saint-Maximin started on the bench against Brentford. You know, they won that game 5-1. Almiron came to the fore. And I do think that the way Newcastle play incisive counter-attacking football, that's kind of been United's kryptonite over the last few years. And you kind of wonder, you know, if they're not at it organisational-wise, you know, United could be in for a bit of a turbulent afternoon.
Newcastle have only lost one game so far in the league this season. They've drawn five matches. Manchester United have not drawn a single match yet, not in league or cup. And I think that's pretty significant. I think the two games between Manchester United and Newcastle United last year were really interesting. And I know that Newcastle United are in a far stronger place. The one at Old Trafford, Ronaldo mania. Manchester United, the scoreline was comfortable, but the game wasn't.
No, that's right. It was in the balance until Ronaldo scored his second, wasn't it? Yeah.
And then the second game at St James's Park, after which I discovered that Laurie likes cocktails, which cost £27.
Is that where it all started?
That's where it started, mate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in the shadow of St James's Park. That's where the...
Of all the glamorous locations you two have drank as well, and it was there.
I know. Oh, and Laurie mentioned the media blitz at Newcastle this week. Within that, one of their leading executives was boasting that they had like 56 pubs within half a mile of the ground.
And sounds all right, doesn't it?
We were in one of them because it was a year since their takeover. But that game there, that was a really bad result for Manchester United. I think Newcastle had won one of their first 19 matches at the time. And now they've clearly progressed. They've signed pretty well. Isak came from Real Sociedad, by the way. Guimarães was a fantastic player at Lyon. I'm amazed another club didn't get him first. And there's that huge support up there. They'll be coming here with a terrible record and with some confidence for the first time. You said 20 years, but it's back to them Keegan side, really, isn't it?
When 25 years.
When they had really good teams. But I can remember coming here in the 80s and their support was incredible. That was when away fans could pay in, and just over to our right there, that was the scoreboard section, and they'll have different pens, each holding like 1,000 each. So like Norwich or Wimbledon would fill one pen. Manchester City, Everton, Liverpool, they'd fill 4 or 5 pens. On a couple of occasions, Newcastle United, 7 pens. Just
really?
Like, honestly.
Fine.
Brilliant away support. So
bit like Ammonia tonight, to be fair. I don't think I've seen that many fans at a European match here at Old Trafford. Away fans, amazing.
Yeah, it was good. 4,500. The record was actually Real Sociedad and Athletic Club. They brought 6,000 each. I try to work up a theory that the best away fans in Europe wear green. Because I think the best ones in recent years were St Etienne.
Celtic.
And Celtic are always good when they come. And they were really good tonight. And I stopped working up that theory because I had to write about the game. But I'm sure people might say, yeah, but what about that team who wore green?
Yeah, there'll be a few suggestions, won't there? Yeah, I'm sure, to be fair. Okay, remember, if you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, you can do so now for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. You get full access to all our great writing on Manchester United, the Premier League, European football, and much more, of course, as well. That's £1 a month for the first 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, well, we spoke about on the last podcast the issue with the tickets for the Chelsea match in a couple of weeks, Andy. Now they've sorted out a kickoff time, there still seems to be an argument over the exact allocation. What's the update?
Well, the latest news is that Must taking legal action to try and reinstate a full allocation. Might be a little bit late in the day to do that, but they
9 days away, isn't it?
They published a very detailed letter, and I say more power to their elbow for doing that. I think that football fans have got to stand up. I was struck by the number of opposing fans who said today this is the right thing to do. Liverpool fans, Tottenham fans, Newcastle fans, you've got to stand up. The decision never stood up to reduce Manchester United's allocation for the reasons which we discussed in the previous podcast. There's no reason why Manchester United shouldn't have the full allocation down there. And the decision wasn't properly explained, and too often football fans who actually go to football matches are at the bottom of the list of priorities. So I know Laurie's covered the story as well in depth in The Athletic, and we probably have similar views on this.
What have the club said about it, Laurie?
Well, the club have been disappointed, haven't they? I think they're, you know, behind the scenes, I think they're probably pretty pissed off that they've had this reduced allocation. It feels like United have kind of been singled out for this treatment. I know it's a sort of London-wide approach now that the Met are taking, that these, you know, high-risk games can't kick off after 4:45 p.m. Which, by the way, I'm still waiting on a response from the Met as to why this rule has been implemented and when it came into pass, because it seems like a fairly new thing. And is there evidence behind it? Because that's what I felt the letter from Must really did explain, or the letter sent on behalf of Must, you know, by the legal team to Hammersmith and Fulham Council, because it had the previous matches at Stamford Bridge, the number of fans that were attended, the kickoff times, and then the number of arrests or rejections, and it's small fry. There's no evidence there that I can see that would say that match, therefore, in future needs to be, you know, a high risk match with many more police officers, or else, you know, the allocation has to be reduced. So, you know, we're still waiting really for a full explanation, because it seems very arbitrary at the moment, and I think that's what the club are feeling like. The club, I think, did a a good strategy, as good as they could have done in the circumstances where, you know, they had to cut 624 fans. I know that Must are trying to get it reinstated, but you know, the likelihood is that they'll have to have this reduced allocation on October 22nd. The club basically said that you'd have to get your ticket in person with an ID on the day. And clearly people sort of swap tickets around, don't they? So I think they sort of thought, well, if people can't really, you know, go through the hardship of that, then they can at least swap it to another game. They've got four different away games that they could swap it to, or they could just cancel it if circumstances have changed and they go, no, actually, I'll opt out and get a full refund. That was an option. And in the end, they managed to get 624 fans that were open to that. So the away end is now sorted in that regard, which I think is a small blessing. But I do think that the point that Andy makes is a lasting one, that, you know, it feels like a creeping authorisation of, if that's the right word, you know, football, where, you know, the police, I don't think, really should be arbitrarily putting these measures in place. I think, you know, it should be...
Dropping some words here, Laurie, mate.
I don't know if that one's a real word, you know, so I'm probably going to get people pulling me up, but it feels like they're sort of wielding their authority in a way that I don't think should be...
Yielding and wielding.
Sure.
That should be used. So, you know, I'm glad that Must have pushed back in this way.
Yeah, of course, keep your eyes peeled to The Athletic for any updates on this. We've just got enough time because the security guards are looking at us. We are literally the only people left in Old Trafford again to talk about... I say an update on a potential takeover. It's not really an update on a potential takeover. It's more a development, isn't it, on the whole sort of noise around Sir Jim Ratcliffe's interest in buying Manchester United. And I think we can definitely call it that now, based on these updated quotes from him. Laurie, you've been fully across this. You sat on the Financial Times live feed of Sir Jim Ratcliffe speaking the other day, didn't you?
I did indeed, yeah. And I sort of sat through quite a lot of stuff that I didn't really understand because a lot of it was about Ineos, you know, his company, various different global issues that are at play, you know, different economic levers that were being discussed. But no, eventually it came on to the...
Is he losing you?
Eventually it came on to the Man United issue, which I think was really what a lot of people had subscribed for. I think actually some people couldn't get on because it had, I think, oversubscribed.
Wow.
But anyway, the point of it was that he was asked, you know, what his opinion was of Manchester United. Could he take over? You know, was he interested in making a bid? And he laughed and kind of dodged the question a little bit, but eventually he said... He'd met Joel and Avram. They are the nicest people, I have to say. Proper gentlemen. They don't want to sell it. Which at least, you know, you could read that a few ways. I've spoken to people that know much more about this than I do, who think that that was just him saying the price is too high and sort of, you know, buttering them up maybe to, you know, keep conversations going over the course of, you know, however many months or even years it might be. But I also came away from it feeling like, you know, that's kind of, you know, a line in the sand, really. I mean, he did make the distinction between Joel and Avram and the rest of the siblings. So I think we've discussed that before on the podcast, where Joel and Avram are the two that, you know, ultimately make the decision.
Yeah.
But he also said, we can't sit around hoping one day Manchester United will become available, and said that he'd basically focus on Nice.
That was, you know, the killer line, wasn't
French
it, really?
French club that he's got. Yeah. You know, he's obviously a man that has, you know, made lots of moves in his career. He spoke about his career in this chat with the Financial Times. Really interesting, the gambles that I suppose he had to take. So he's saying there, well, listen, I'm, you know, I'm 65, into my late 60s, and, you know, I'm in Monaco, I've got a nice life. I, you know, I don't want to be, you know, waiting around trying to, you know, really persuade or force the arm of the Glazers. If they're not willing to have this kind of dialogue, which it seems to be what he's saying, then he'll look elsewhere.
I think I'll be banned from Ineos after failing to recognise their most famous cyclist in the Tour de France in the summer.
I remember this story, yeah.
Tour de France winning one. I did go to Nice, the club that he owned, and to interview Morgan Schneiderlin for The Athletic. I was really impressed by what he'd done there, actually. Stadium was all done, just the club philosophy. But the main point on this one, it depends, I think, whether you're half full or half empty. I've never been given any indication that the Glazers want to sell. There's fracture lines, you know, between the family. It's not just one person who says we want this for Manchester United, because the club is owned by the siblings. I think there's a little bit of bait thrown by Jim Ratcliffe to Manchester United fans, where he said the club are not firing on all cylinders, and you can just see millions of Manchester United fans going, go on, do something about it, go on, go on. But he doesn't own the train set.
No.
So he can't. I think his description of the Glazers raised eyebrows among a lot of Manchester United fans, but then they've never met them. And if they don't want to sell, then it's the impasse that we've had since 2005. He's been hugely successful to get to where he is. You don't get to his level by being absolutely cutting and hard in business. Whether he's got a greater strategy, and people are discussing that, only he knows that. But I think that some United fans will see him saying, you know, if it's not going to be Manchester United, then it's going to be somebody else. And they'll go, oh, no, you know, that's like, you're not going to sign a star striker. He's going to go somewhere else. So,
yeah, it feels like a missed opportunity, doesn't it, in that sense? Right, we're getting the finger again from the security guard, so we better call it a day. Don't forget, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. Go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. But Andy sat next to me here in Old Trafford. Thank you. Laurie at home, thank you as well. Us three will be reunited after the Newcastle game for the next podcast. Let's hope we've got another famous victory to reflect on. Good old Scott McTominay. See you on the next one. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.